He's a principal engineer in the Corporate Backbone Networks Computer-Aided Engineering Group. He's published a number of papers on VHDL and has made a number of presentations on high-level logic design. His organization currently has a VHDL process in place, and I believe that in the past they've taught courses within digital on VHDL. And Shahid is going to address, again, the migration from DEXIM to VHDL today.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon, everybody. Before I get started, I'd like to say that you ought to take whatever I say in the knowledge that my background is really start off as a hardware engineer, but also I'm somebody with a background in software from assembler right through to ADA. And I have to say that a lot of my emphasis today will be on getting the high leverage out of VHDL that I think we can as a high-level language. Before I get into the bulk of my slides, I ought to say that the slides will look quite busy to you, but I wrote them so that in a form that hopefully you'll be able to take with you or take away with you, and if necessary, read and understand hopefully later on. Now, my first slide really would appear to overlap with Norbert's first slide entitled, but what I'd really like to cover is why VHDL, as from a high level in terms of the productivity and where we want the design process of our engineers to be in the 90s. Fundamentally, I think most people will appreciate that their ASIC designs in the early 80s, maybe 5,000, 6,000 gates was considered a large design. Now we're talking about 50, 60, maybe even greater than that gates. At the same time, we've seen our product development cycles. When I was in hardware back in starting around 83, we might have taken 3 years to develop a backplane comms option, whereas now, really the marketplace is driving us towards an 18-month product development cycle. Specifically, we've found that the gating item in our product development, which includes hardware, software, firmware, and so forth, has been the ASICs. In that the software is inevitably developed before the modules, and the modules are inevitably sitting there in the lab waiting for the ASICs to turn up. So for most of my presentation, I'd like to try and focus in on where I think VHDL wins us design time to market for the ASICs. As a design group, then, we really felt that we wanted to be able to use architecture-level verification, as well as being able to do high-level design really through the kinds of data types that we used. The reason why I think we had a particular problem there was that within networking, we have to address the gamut or the spectrum of data from, say, OSI or DECnet Phase 5 packets coming in down on an Ethernet, right down to the ones and zeros propagating across a future bus backplane, in order to be able to verify that our system would work with the performance that we expected. Another aspect, which I think touches on some of the points that were brought up in the very first presentation today, is really around the documentation and design evolvability. Communications is a field that's been growing quite rapidly, but it's also a field in which if you get a design right and you implement a protocol correctly once, you ought to be able to reuse pieces of that protocol later on. So we were very interested in the evolvability of a design, both from the reuse point of view and also from the point of view that we have a design group which is physically located half in Southeast England and half in Southern Ireland. We needed to be able to express and communicate the design intent as well as the design detail. To that extent, we also wanted to be able to depend on a system-enforced level of consistency checking. What I mean by that is a modern high-level language compiler like Ada or even Pascal provides us with a level of data type and basically consistency checking that previous languages like BDS just couldn't. Really, that's a function of the richness of the data types involved. And really, even for that reason, C was a language that we looked at as giving us a relatively portable form of simulation, but we discarded. The third reason, the other significant reason for looking to VHDL was that we wanted to be portable across tool suites. We have got frankly cheesed off by being jerked around by some of the vendors out there who think that once they've locked us in with a few hundred thousand lines of code, that we're not going to be able to move, and we're never going to put up with that again, frankly. Almost as a consequence of all this lot, we expect that the reduced timescales that we're forced to live with mean that we have to produce the design right first time. You know, we can't afford the prototyping cycle, reprototyping cycle. It's just not acceptable to us anymore. So that's why VHDL. Now, having pretty much come to that conclusion, we wanted to do something about it. So back in about 1988, we as a group really followed through this thought process and came to the conclusion that VHDL was the language we wanted, and we now had to ask ourselves, how do we actually get VHDL in use within our group, benefiting our hardware engineers? We decided that this had to come in two overall phases, and I won't pretend that at the beginning we had such a clear view of how it was going to work out. Some of this is 2020 hindsight. Really, the first thing was, just like a question that many people will be asking themselves today, is how real is VHDL? You know, what's it really buy me? You know, I'm going to go through all this pain of migrating not only my simulator, but all the thousands of ancillary tools we have hooked off the simulator. What do I really have to do to make this thing pay off? And we saw that there were a few steps to that, and as a CAE person rather than a hardware person, we needed to be able to bring in VHDL expertise as well as some basic simulator technology in-house to really evaluate what it could buy us as a group. We wanted to then move on, having built up some expertise, to understand and to educate our users and their managers as to what VHDL would really buy. Thirdly, we wanted to select a particular project that we could use VHDL in a production environment to really prove once and for all this is a language that would buy us, CBN, some time to market. And thirdly, we realized that the migration task was going to be pretty enormous. And in order to try and simplify the transition process, we wanted to try and concentrate aspects, particularly of our ASIC design, into actually language-independent tools, which would produce DeckSim at that time, but which could in the future be switched over to VHDL at the press of a button. In the second phase, we'd actually get into the migration itself, and really, that we realized that would involve not only the acquisition of a simulator, but new schematics tools and new synthesis tools to really take advantage of the mixed text and graphics environment that we wanted to use, as well as the synthesis tools. To complete the migration, we felt that we'd have the opportunity to develop some new language-independent tools and to tie up the migration by fully integrating VHDL into the ASIC design flow and also into the module flow. And the important point I'd like to emphasize is that we wanted at each stage to make these changes or propose these changes in the light of the productivity gains we could really achieve. For us, this was not an ideological struggle. This was a struggle for survival as a group in a harsh world. Okay. I'd like to dive into what I call phase one, selling the concept. We needed to convince the guys that the benefits that we were saying you could get out of VHDL were real. So the first thing we did was we ran a series of seminars really geared towards two groups of people, the managers of the groups, as well as the engineers themselves, to really try and push across the idea of what we thought VHDL would buy as a high-level language in direct competition to the Dexim stroke System Hilo 3 environment that we'd been used to. Really, the focus of that was to highlight the difference between the hardware development process and the software development process. At that time, the software development process, if you looked at it, they had sophisticated tools like LSE combined with source code analysis tools and also source code debugging. Really, in hardware, in 1988, none of that existed. As a result of that, and the fact that there wasn't really a commercially available VHDL simulator, we proposed to develop a VHDL simulator to prove the concepts. We actually did manage to do that by layering on a comprehensive VHDL front end on top of Dexim. And although it was a subset simulator, I think we differed from most of the subset simulators that you hear about in that we actually didn't bother implementing the low-level features that most of the vendors did eventually. We concentrated on implementing the high-level data structures, records, arrays, enumerated types, and variable size data structures like pointers or access types, because we felt that the key power and the key advantage from VHDL was not to use it as yet another netlist format, but really to develop VHDL into a process for verifying the early stages of our design process. We felt that if we could get the complexity of our design verified early on, we'd be able to leverage off that throughout the rest of the design cycle. So to that extent, as I say, we modeled completely all the VHDL data structures. We provided a very friendly user interface, and we just layered, wherever we could, we just layered on top of existing tools so that anybody who'd done any software development in a VMS environment would feel very comfortable just jumping in with the VHDL. So we had source code debug, we had full compiler diagnostics, integration with LSE, all the usual stuff. And since it was layered on top of Dexim, it allowed us not only to leverage off the Dexim experience of actually simulation command line, but we could actually use all of Dexim's, all Dexim models, all existing Dexim models. So really that leads on to the second point, which was that having developed the system, we now needed to be able to use it on a real life project to prove what we said was true about its productivity. And in fact, the program that CBN has been working on for the last couple of years now, Hastings, we used VHDL to model the Hastings architecture. We actually proposed to do that modeling work all in VHDL, partially because the people said it couldn't be done in Dexim. There's just too much of it. Within the sort of time frames we were talking about, there's no way to do that level of work in Dexim. So we, the CAE group, having developed the simulator and system, we became users of the system. We performed live code development and modeling and simulation, and we actually were able to identify bottlenecks and the limitations of the Hastings architecture that we were working on. So we knew months and months before anybody else had done any detailed work which queues would fill up first in the system, which buffers would fill up first, where the limitations were. And interestingly enough, we were relying on the backplane we had been selected was a IEEE 896 Futurebus Plus specification. At that time, the Futurebus specification was only a draft standard, and we actually found a couple of bugs using the VHDL simulation. We actually found some bugs in the Futurebus spec. Right. The sort of modeling that we did, we used abstract data types. We modeled OSI packets as being OSI packets. We modeled the future bus as actually being open collector ones and zeros. We modeled the firmware processes. We modeled the internal buffering using queuing type models, almost stochastic type modeling. But we were able to do all of that in VHDL. And the output from the simulation we actually outputted files that could be directly read into tools like DeckCalc and DeckGraph to produce graphs. Okay. One of the reasons why we wanted to model the physical bus as well as the higher level data types was because we wanted to be able to run our existing Dexsim code debug environment where we use C code transactors to run on our processes. We also wanted to be able to verify the behavioral model of the future bus against the implementation of the future bus, again, because we knew the future bus specification was not solid and we wanted to have multiple implementations or through multiple interpretations and make sure they worked against each other. And also to verify the bandwidth that the system would ultimately be able to implement. And finally, the other reason for actually implementing the physical open collector bus was so that we'd have this huge behavioral code system that implemented the whole of a Hastings system. But when we eventually ended up with structural models of modules, we wanted to be able to plug those right into an otherwise fully behavioral system and actually simulate packets coming in and out. The closest we thought we could get to system simulation in reasonable runtime. Towards the end, we handed the modeling over to the actual hardware developers, and I think the system culminated in somewhere between 30,000 and 50,000 lines of VHDL. So at that point, I think we'd made our mark and really proved that VHDL could be used and it could be used to benefit on real projects. Okay. One of the other threads running through our migration philosophy was that we had a large design community that were used to Dexsim. And one of the biggest difficulties I think we faced in migrating our users was how to teach them exactly where to put all the semicolons and the commas and the ones and the zeros and the quotes and the endless confusion that taking a group of people who are really only used to hardware and logic analyzers and teaching them a high-level language. And what we decided that, look, we could take one step back from a language to something that people understood more widely, which was graphics, and try to give them some intuitive tools that we could target to Dexsim today, but by writing a suitable back end, just convert to VHDL at the flick of a switch later on. And one of these tools was called GState, really used to describe state machines, which actually form a large portion of our designs, anywhere between 30 and 50% of the complexity of a CBN ASIC tends to be state machine. So having developed GState, we developed the VHDL back end, and that allowed us about 18 months ago, early 1989, we were able to do some evaluation work on the Synopsys system way back then, because we could take the tens of thousands of lines of state machine code in Dexsim, translate them trivially regenerate them trivially in VHDL, and actually run them through Synopsys to see if it was real. And the point of doing that was that we could show the hardware guys that VHDL was not a flash in the pan. It was a language that we could take, and we could just go out to an arbitrary third party and do synthesis with it to prove the reality of third-party VHDL. We also tried quite hard with the Dexsim guys to convince them that they should implement VHDL. I think, and we failed in that, obviously, but nevertheless, part of the process of talking to volume simulator developers or large or very experienced simulator developers was that they gave us some ammunition so that we could go away and talk to people like Genrad and Teradyne and really push them hard to develop VHDL. And we've worked very closely with both Teradyne and Genrad in the UK to tell them and make them understand exactly what we want out of a VHDL system. We also ran some courses in the in the US to raise the profile of VHDL, really because digital is the sort of company where once one person or one group goes out and buys a particular system, everybody else then can jump in. But you need to achieve a certain critical mass before all the library support and all the secondary issues that you need to solve to get a proper functioning CAE process in place. There are thousands of bits and pieces. You need to achieve that critical mass. So at the end of all that, I think the hardware guys pretty much loved us, apart from the bugs in the vSIM environment. But I think they saw the value of VHDL, basically. So now we were faced with the actual, having sold them this wonderful idea, we now had to live up to our promise and actually deliver on all the things we said we could, that VHDL would buy them. And we needed to replace, if you look at any typical ASIC process I'm sure you guys use, or any module process that you people use, you'll find that nearly every tool that you have is leveraged off in some way off the simulator that you use and the simulation language that you use. This is not, you know, it was not a trivial conversion. It's not a point conversion to make. However, it's still true to say that the key piece of the puzzle is the simulator. And we decided that we absolutely had to have a full-featured VHDL simulator because all the vendors out there were saying they had subsets, but unfortunately their subsets only handled ones and zeros, and it was just another way of writing a netlist. And if you use VHDL in those terms, as some of the other speakers have alluded, you actually go backwards from where we are today because we lose things like dual timing and the ability to do reconversion fan-out analysis and so forth. So we had to have full-featured VHDL, or we have to have. The VHDL must be tightly integrated with the schematics editor. In order, if you look at a software development environment, people don't put up with 33 different tools running one after the other. They have LSE and they want to compile with LSE. They want to, when they run the program, they want to run the VAX debugger, call up LSE from within that environment. The integration they have in software is about a billion times better than we had in hardware. And we had to have that. It just wasn't good enough not to have that level of integration. One of the things that also drove us towards that is that around source code debug and library management was that as a group, as I mentioned before, we're split between England and Ireland. And unless we had some level of source code management and decent library control, we were just going to fall in a heap. It's very straightforward. So, where are we now? We think that we're going to buy a new simulator. I've said here 9 to 15 months. I think that's a bit of an overestimate. I think by the end of this year, we will have chosen a VHDL simulator and a schematics editor combination that we want to go with. We're also aware that every third party, about a year ago at DAC, they announced VHDL, and we're a year on from the announcements, and they're beginning to deliver on those promises. So the openness of VHDL is coming true. In terms of synthesis, which is one of the other key pieces, we have to have some level of integration also between the synthesis tool and the simulator and the schematics, for the reason that, as one of the other speakers alluded, in VHDL, you can have this idea where you have one entity which has multiple implementations, each has different architectures. And actually, a relatively natural way to do code development is that you start off with architecture A, then you do a debug, and you end up with architecture B, and then C, and then D, and then E. And unless you are careful and have some process in place to make sure that the debugged version of the architecture is E, but you actually try and fab an ASIC with the synthesis that you did of architecture B, you're going to be in serious problems when those ASICs come back. So integration is actually key. Source code management, library management was all very important to us. As a result, I think we're working very closely with in-house VHDL synthesis developments. Particularly, we are experienced users of Aladdin, and we look forward to seeing some VHDL front ends for Aladdin. But at the risk of annoying some Gymfinity, by definition, VHDL for us is a portable language. If Gymfinity tomorrow drops dead under a bus, or the Aladdin development group gets snapped up by Synopsys, right? We don't, harsh as it may sound, we don't really care because we just go and buy Synopsys instead. You know, hey, I'm not pedantic. I will buy whatever tool it takes for my hardware guys to deliver product, and so my pay rise at the end of the year reflects that. It's very simple for me. So, really, my next slide just expands on a bit of that, which is, it's a little bit of a divergence off VHDL, but just really to say that as a parallel activity in terms of the tool selection and the tools we'll look to do, we already have concurrent engineering as far as the actual ASIC and ASIC development goes. We provide a panes of glass type environment with reserve and replace. We provide revision management, configuration control. We insist on having those in the future. And as we obsolete the in-house developments by going to third-party frameworks, we won't put up with anything less. All right. So far, I've really talked about VHDL in a fairly traditional environment. There are a couple of other slides, and I'm aware that I'm running out of time, but just to quickly go through them. There are some people going around saying that you don't need schematics anymore. You can synthesize everything. It's not true, right? We recognize, I think, in CBN, the complementary nature of text and graphics. There are some things like sequential behavior or algorithmic behavior, which is much better to describe in text or much more convenient in text. There are other forms of description, like particularly the parallelism or the interconnection of components, which is much more naturally described graphically. And one of the things that we're looking for as a next generation schematics tool is the ability to almost have hypertext capabilities, the sort of thing that you go to a Macintosh and you write compound documents. That's the sort of thing that we ought to have out of our schematic systems, schematic entry systems. We'll also build on productivity and quality. Really, I think one of the things that points that Don Conrad was making was that you need to keep the productivity and the consistency and the quality of the models up, and we think by sticking to existing language-independent tools and, where possible, developing new ones, or in fact, as recent developments along the iLogics and the other things that Don Conrad is talking about, those sorts of tools will give us the modeling aids that we need to keep our designers away from those semicolons, right? Semicolons are all very well for the expert users, but you know, let's not let everybody loose on them on day one. At the same time, we have to make sure that the third-party developers, particularly the simulators, really understand what we want out of VHDL. It's relatively easy to build a simulator. It's harder to build a simulator with an interface that allows you to do effective, efficient debug. Things like you go along to most simulators and they have source code debug. They can put the tick in the box. But what most simulator vendors perhaps don't realize is that the difficulty in hardware design isn't debugging one sequential piece of code. You can read through that and debug the damn thing. What you need to debug is when you've got 15 pieces of hardware talking to each other through some complex handshaking protocol. The parallelism implies that you need new ways of debugging. You need to be able to look at multiple processes at the same time. You need to be able to flick backwards and forwards between the state of a strobe signal in one process and the acknowledge signal in another. And basically what I'm saying is I think that a lot of the simulator vendors, they're really, in terms of the debug environment, they're back where the software guys were about 15 years ago. And we need to beat them over the head a bit. I mean, they're picked up on Motif, but that's not enough for me. All right. So, one of the other key areas that the structured nature of VHDL lends itself to is actually structured design. By that, I mean that today, as a group, we perform CAE support functions, where we support hardware guys. when I get back next week and beyond, I expect that the firmware and the software guys will begin to pick up case tools, and when we design systems, we'll be taking Jordan and Ward Meller and so forth, designing the processes and so forth at the top level, and using a rational decomposition into ASICs and MPUs and so forth. At the moment, I used to be a hardware engineer, I know how it works. You think of this system, you work out what it needs to do, and you think, I reckon I need 15 MIPS here. I'll stick down a TMS320C25. I think I'll have to mop up some of this DMA functionality into an ASIC. We have very little way of actually rationally deriving those decisions. I'm not saying that Jordan and Ward Meller solve all the problems in the universe, but at least they allow us to document the decisions and the design constraints that are imposed so early on that at the moment we have no way of questioning them later on. So that's what I mean by pen and paper today, deck design tomorrow. One of these days, deck design will be able to generate ADA source code, and we'll then convince them to generate VHDL source code as well. Or we'll buy iLogix and force iLogix to understand CDD repository. So, my last two slides, really. Incorporating VHDL into the ASIC design flow. I know that you people know how hard a job that is, and I've just covered it in a couple of lines, to really say what we think are the current problems. The current problem for me is that I simulate fault-free in DECSIM, I simulate faults in DEC fault. I simulate dynamic timing verification in laser once in worst case, once in best case. I simulate then again to find some other kinds of faults in auto-dilly worst case and auto-dilly best case. You can count how many simulations we do. This is bullshit. We will always need to do more than one simulation. What I can't stomach is the number of libraries I have to maintain, the number of library bugs I have to hassle the guys in the ASIC center to fix for me. I want life to be easy. I like to be paid a lot of money, but I also want my life to be easy. So I'm not going to put up with that anymore. So I want VHDL to be tightly integrated into the ASIC center flow. If not, who knows? We might have to go somewhere else. So we'll work with Franklin and we'll work with the silicon vendors. We want a single simulation environment for single timing, dual timing, fault simulation within a framework for back-end flow. By that, I'm really trying to address the timing limitations in VHDL. What I'm saying is that I want to do my behavioral debug using a simulator, and I want to use essentially what looks to me like the same simulator once I've mapped to the gate level synthesis or whether I've done a schematic to do both the dual timing and the fault simulation. So if you held me against the wall and put a gun to my head and asked me what, then I'd say, whoa, Teradyne, whoa, Genrad, something like that. And really, that's what I'm looking for. At the moment, I want to circumvent VHDL 1076 1987 form. Got timing problems. I want to get around those in real life. To me, the relevance of VHDL to the module environment at first sight is a little bit harder to grasp. Of course, there's the argument about modeling and model availability, and I take all those for granted. I mean, you people aren't stupid, I hope, so I think I don't need to talk about that anymore. Some of the other guys have done a good job of that. What we're seeing today in terms of models out of people like Logic Automation is that we see what they call, the state of the art is really what they call smart models, where they'll give you a model of a 68030 and you can actually look at the registers, you can deposit into the registers just directly from your workstation in the middle of a simulation. But I want to go a bit further than that, as with everything else. I want my software people to start system integration a little bit earlier than they do at the moment, like about 3 or 4 months earlier. The only way to do that is for them to be able to use the simulation that we have today as a like we do with microprocessor development systems. Now, while I'm the first to appreciate that there's a big simulation speed or simulation ratio issue here, typically, the way we do software, we do it in layers. There are people who do low-level drivers that talk to the software, that talk to the hardware. And those are the key things to debug. The rest of the stuff can normally be debugged with some relatively easy test setups. But what I'm looking for is for the vendors we've been pushing since 1988, like Motorola and Zilog, not to repeat the screw-ups we've had with the C-Lance and the MC68302, and the actual dollar pain it has caused Digital to fix those problems in terms of simulation. We want to get rid of those problems up front. We want those vendors to work with industry modelers to provide us with models that can do that we can use to do code debug. We want to be able to simulate, you know, 10 or 15 milliseconds worth of hardware at module level with a few hundred thousand gates thrown in at the ASIC level. And that will allow us to start systems integration in parallel with the ASIC fabrication. And as I say, we expect to do the simple stuff with the simulator, hopefully using VHDL, because as a language, most software developers will find VHDL much more intuitive than, say, DECSIM. Slightly longer term, and with less relevance to VHDL directly, is we'd look towards technologies like Incur and QuickTurn to provide us with ASIC emulation so that we can run tens of seconds or minutes or hours of live code and actually route packets around the building with emulated ASICs. And really, the only relevance to VHDL is the fact that it's a standard language that all those people will understand. So, for those of you who are still awake, a summary. I think, and you know, only you can only get the truth of this by asking my actual hardware designers, I think we've successfully completed the first phase of CBN's migration to VHDL. And we've done that by dangling a productivity carrot and a quality carrot in front of the hardware guys. You know, I don't really, you know, to me, I am an ideological person, but I'm more interested in my pay packet, okay? I'll give them whatever they want, but it's in my interest to make sure they want what will produce products better. That's the first phase, and the second phase is now, we've used VHDL very successfully at the front end of the design process to really do architecture verification. Unlike Norbert's group, who've done things yet pretty much the opposite way to us, we haven't really used VHDL at the gate level to actually do implementation, right? The simulators are only now becoming available to let us do that. So we're now looking, as I say, by the end of this year, early next year, to have a full-blown VHDL environment around, and so we can actually deliver on the promise that we've given our hardware engineers for VHDL. That's pretty much it. I'd just like to make a couple of concluding remarks. One of the things that concerns us as a CA group is that with the shrinking size of the profit and loss centers within Digital, one of our traditional strengths in tool development, where one group like DECSIM developed a tool, which then the rest of the corporation was able to pick up and use, we're in danger of losing some of that. And please, one of the key benefits of a forum like this is that we should go away, not just with the understanding that we might be able to each better our own little groups, but with the idea that we can cooperate in some way to help leverage corporate discounts or modeling agreements so we can move forward as a corporation. There are some facilities that we can use to assist that. There's a VHDL notes file. I myself can provide you with various VHDL tools and bits and pieces to perhaps get your guys started. We have VHDL templates for LSE. At the risk of cheesing off the guys who are going to ask you for dollars for their courses, we can give you the course notes for the VHDL course that we delivered in the US about a year ago, complete with labs, provide your own simulator. And finally, get in touch with me by mail. I'm an elf. Any questions? Yes.
In any of your tool development or the use of VHDL, did you have any problems with the asynchronous nature of FutureBus?
No, because there's nothing in VHDL to stop. Sorry, the question was, do we have any problems with the asynchronous nature of future bus in developing
Hastings?
No, I think is the answer. We developed a future. If you look at the future bus specification, it's a series of RS latches. So our model of future bus is about 8 million RS latches, which is just triggered one off of that. But we can give you the source code for that if you have a need or an interest. And that model is in VHDL. If you use the right system, you can even use that with the rest of your Dexium environment. Yes? Well, okay, other people have made that point as well. The question is really around the performance of VHDL. Now, I can only answer that as an analogy. I mean, I don't develop any VHDL simulators for commercial use. However, if you look at a first-class Ada compiler, a few years ago, the same criticisms were being made of Ada. However, optimizing compiler technology is equally applicable to Ada as it is to C, well, perhaps more to Ada than it is to C. And I think if you look at a world-class Ada compiler, like the VAX Ada compiler or the DEC Ada compiler, you'll find the runtime performance of that isn't substantially different from the runtime performance of Fortran, of VAX Fortran, or anything else. So, while today I might agree that there's, I might even pay a 50% performance penalty for the VHDL. However, first of all, I expect that to improve as the simulator vendors get smarter with their simulators. And secondly, the speed of a simulator is determined by the number of events that are occurring. In VHDL, I can express a high-level data type like an OSI packet. The arrival of an OSI packet is a single event. I can pass 10,000 bytes across very easily. I can make a floating point type, which is just one event. Whereas in Dexim, at some point or another, I'd have to break that all down into bits. Each of those bits would be arriving somewhere and causing events to occur. So in that sense, while it's absolutely true that bit for bit, it's likely that the runtime checks implied by VHDL will lead to lower performance at the end of the day, I think most of the time I'm going to be simulating at a much higher level. That's right. Okay. What I'm saying is, at the gate level, if you look, the runtime checking there isn't very much runtime checking implied by the VHDL standard at gate level. If you have a gate level netlist where the only data type is a 1 and a 0, which all gates ultimately decompose into, then the compiler can do all the runtime checking you need. There is no runtime checking overhead at netlist level. Now, of course, a vendor may not do a good job of implementing that.
Are you benchmarking them at all with other vendors and other kind of simulators existing?
Okay, I think today you could take a simulator like Hilo and do such a benchmark. I haven't done any such work. But I have no reason to believe it's going to be any worse than anything else. I'm not aware of any such numbers. Any other questions? Paul?
I'm a little bit confused about what exactly you did to sell VHDL to your designers. What you mentioned was that you put together a model that identified bottlenecks and limitations in the architecture, and that can very easily be done with a number of tools that exist currently,
okay,
including just writing a model in C.
Right.
How did identifying bottlenecks and architectural limitations translate into newness for VHDL?
Okay, the first thing is that in terms of Dexim, for instance, they said it couldn't be done. There are just too many lines of code involved to model the system. So that threw Dexim out. We then decided not to worry too much about any other high-level language because, well, C specifically, high-level language or not, I'm not sure, but we wanted to have a design group that would be split physically across half a dozen, three locations, Reading, Clonmel, and Galway. With C, we felt that the level of type checking involved and the level of design integrity that we could assure wasn't enough. And one of the instances is that one of the bottlenecks that we did actually fix was that we had a buffering concept within the Hastings architecture, which we modeled using a subtype in VHDL, which was constrained between the values 0 to 12. When we were doing our simulation, we discovered that we got a constraint error with a floating with an overflow, which told us that buffer wasn't big enough to handle the number of packets that we wanted to do. Now, in any other language like C, that would have been passed without comment, because the range of the number was still within an integer, and nothing would have complained. The point is that the runtime checking in VHDL allowed us to trap the fact that that buffer had overflowed, or that somebody was trying to access a buffer which didn't exist, basically. No other language would have done that.
There are architectural level simulators that are probably doing the same thing. This I may work.
Correct, but they're not standards. Is there no other questions? Oh, sorry. Absolutely. Absolutely. We're just a couple of guys who sit in Reading hacking about the software. We didn't want to write a new simulator. What we did was, I can give you the details later on if you like, but basically we take VHDL and we do full semantic checking on it in terms of data types and everything using the VAX Ada compiler. What we do is we translate all the behavioral parts of VHDL into Ada, and then we connect them all together using the netlist format in DECSIM. And lo and behold, you can use the DECSIM command line, you can use DECSIM macros, you can use the VAX debugger, you can use LSE, it's all tightly integrated. I can give you the details of that later on if you want. We've got a kit available. If you want to play with a VHDL simulator, the kit for vSim is available. Any donations greatly get accepted.